CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with my colleague Gordon Chang at Gordon G. Chang. A meeting between two principals of the Indo-Pacific, the Prime Minister of Japan, Kishida, and the Prime Minister of India, Mr. Modi. What this represents right now of the immediate future, given the adversarial relationship with China and Russia, given the questions about trade going forward, globalization, and development of the world island. We welcome Lance Gatling, principal of Nexial Research. He's in Tokyo. Lance, this news of the prime minister speaking with the prime minister of India, dominating the story here, how is it received in Tokyo? Is there a celebration? Good evening to you.
Good evening. Well, the celebrations today were primarily for Japan beating the United States in the World Baseball Classic. The number of people in Japan that really pay close attention to diplomacy is like most places. It's not the majority of folks, but it certainly made great news here. What Prime Minister Kishida did was expand upon the vision first voiced by Prime Minister Abe of a free and open Indo-Pacific. But the new version, version 2.0, if you would, that Prime Minister Kishida laid out was expanding beyond a relatively narrow scope of the Indo-Pacific, the literal lands across the Indian Ocean, linking all the Eastern commerce to oil sources and resources in the Middle East and beyond, and the markets of Europe. He's now expanded that beyond to the global south to talk to people in faraway Africa, to nations in South America, to the Pacific Islands, not neglecting much of anybody. So bringing $75 billion in planned yen loans, in private investment, in unilateral grants. And it remains to be seen exactly where they're going to drop all this money and effort. But I anticipate that a significant amount of it will be spent in the in efforts to offset the Chinese maritime version of the Silk Road, which is a string of pearls that go across the Indian Ocean and have given Chinese access big debts, loans for projects for any number of nations in the Indo-Pacific region. And it's going to be very interesting to see how this plays out against still the an administration that is suffering from relatively low popularity at home.
Gordon, you have a question for Lance.
Lance, are people surprised by Prime Minister Kishida's outreach? Because it's not only India and Ukraine, but it's also South Korea, which is significant in itself. So did people think that this would happen when Kishida became prime minister?
Well, there certainly was a great deal of belief that Kishida's primary strategies would be follow-ons from Prime Minister Abe. They were closely aligned. Prime Minister Abe had blazed a significant trail, and left a great basis for this sort of activist diplomacy, bilateral or even multilateral, which Japan had been very loath to do before. In the years when I first got here, it was called comprehensive security. They would not step on anybody's toes in the event that they would close off a market or access to, particularly to energy. So they would, for example, maintain relations both with the Iranians and the Iraqis during the war. They had visa-free travel from both warring nations to come to Japan. But now they're picking and choosing sides, and they're picking the people that can help them the most. This foray with India underscores what has previously gone on with India. For example, the special strategic and global partnership between India and Japan was a building block, but now there's a military agreement, acquisition and cross-servicing agreement, where they can barter in an emergency, they can barter military supplies, so they would not have to, you know, drag their own jet fuel for a fighter plane or something across the planet. They can actually barter that out. And they're building these blocks primarily bilateral relationships. But as we mentioned before we started, when you get the German prime minister here, that's not necessarily singularly bilateral. It's also an indication that Japan is bellying up to NATO for operational missions and coordination.
Yes, I want to emphasize that. NATO in the Pacific. NATO, I remember Jens Stoltenberg significantly visiting Seoul and speaking with President Yoon. And what you're indicating is that Japan is sympathetic or leaning towards participating with NATO in future in opposition to Russia and China. Is that too much to say at this point, Lance? NATO and Japan together against the adversaries?
Well, the Japanese are very loath to identify specific adversaries. In fact, in this this newest foray, when the expansion of the free and open Indo-Pacific concept, number one is working under the rule of law, and unspoken in that is the fact that there's a wide belief here that China is not working under the rule of law. What the Japanese look to is cooperation. Process is incredibly important here, and having a process where free and equal nations can discuss in a forum how to proceed, particularly in light of conflicts, possible military conflicts or other conflicts. Yet the Chinese have, in fact, closed off much of the South China Sea, building man-made islands and claiming most of it as a inland Chinese lake. And that's an activity that the Japanese simply cannot countenance. But they are pretty careful to not to criticize it directly in so many words, although that does slip out from the occasional politician and perhaps a bit more brash diplomats from time to time.
Gordon, you have a question for Lance.
Lance, China is obviously pressuring Japan, and it's not just the territorial disputes like over the Senkakus in the East China Sea. But as you point out, Tokyo is very much focused on that, especially after the Ukraine war. Where do you see China-Japan relations, let's say, a year from now?
I believe that they will, in fact, sit down and discuss confidence-building measures, ways to avoid direct conflict. The marker that the Japanese have set out with the United States in providing long-range anti-ship missiles to fortify the Japanese portion of the first island chain, which is essentially the Ryukyu Islands in the prefecture of Okinawa that stretch within 50 miles or so of Taiwan. That's a cork in the Chinese bottle, as it were. When the U.S. Marine commander of the forces that would be deployed in that essentially said, we are looking at executing a sea denial strategy, which means that they would deny the Chinese free use of their own Yellow Sea, which is north of Taiwan. The next step is, of course, the U.S. bases going into the Philippines, which would enable it to provide a check on the Chinese military power in the South China Sea.
We have 30 seconds.
Of course, Taiwan is the
30 seconds. Go ahead.
And of course, Taiwan is the crown jewel of the first island chain, and it provides this huge block to Chinese access to the Pacific and through the Malacca Straits into the energy markets and beyond in the Middle East and European commercial markets.
Lance Gatling is a principal of Nexo Research. He is in Tokyo celebrating the victory in a baseball game. Gordon Chang at Gordon G. Chang. I'm John.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.